Fires deep, middle of the field, intercepted. An incredible pick by Patrick Peterson.
Welcome to Arizona Cardinals Underground, presented by the Arizona Cardinals mobile app. Visit azcardinals.com/app.
Touchdown, Arizona!
The latest news and notes from the guys who cover the team.
Great move to the right at the 50. Cuts back to the left at the 40. He's loose at the 30. He's at the 20, the 10. Touchdown, Cardinals!
Rise up and make a play.
He's hit by Chandler Jones and sacked.
You've got to be kidding me.
Touchdown, Larry Fitzgerald!
This is football at its finest.
Here's Paul Calvisi.
I'm not going to say if. I'm going to say when. When the Arizona Cardinals win a Super Bowl, I'm curious, Darren Urban, look to the man to your right. Young Kyle over there.
Yes.
I'm going to ask you to profile for a moment. You have permission to profile. Would young Kyle be more apt to be the climb the light pole guy in celebration?
No.
Would he be the pile on the Ritz-Carlton canopy guy? Maybe the flip the park car guy.
Oh, man.
What about the mattress down the steps of the art museum guy? Would that be?
I didn't see that one.
I missed that one.
You know, dare I say, he wouldn't be the bad guy. He wouldn't be the window breaker or the looter or the convenience store. That wouldn't be young Kyle, would it?
Kyle is fairly laid back, I would say.
Okay. And the worst of all, the streaker. He wouldn't be the naked guy.
Well, he's a Cubs fan, so ask him what he did when the Cubs won.
Really? There's a track record here?
The Cardinals won, wouldn't I be really boring and just be writing a couple of stories after the game?
The truth is, you'd be in the press box.
Yeah.
And you'd have no time for any of the above.
No, that's not true. Having covered a Super Bowl, we will make sure that it's not going to be all work and no play. If this team wins the Super Bowl, we're not going to spend all night writing. Yeah. I'm going to tell you that right now.
Okay. All right. There you go. We have that on record. Cardinals Underground, this offseason edition. It's right there. You can go back into the archives, courtesy of Jim Omohundro, and you can cite that. Yeah. When the Cardinals win that next Super Bowl. Kyle. So that's good.
Cool.
Takeaways from Super Bowl 52, gentlemen, because that's where the season officially ended. That's where the offseason officially begins for everyone now. What'd you think of the Super Bowl? Was it as exciting as a guy who's been to so many games, Darren? And I say that I do respect.
Oh, I appreciate that.
Preseason, regular season, and postseason. What did you think of the game itself?
It was entertaining. I mean, I didn't particularly – I'm certainly – not somebody who would root for the Patriots, but I don't particularly like the Eagles that much either. So there wasn't a whole lot of, hey, I need one team or the other to win.
It's not that the Eagles were such an underdog and so lovable. It's that the Patriots were so hateable. Yeah. There's so much Patriots fatigue.
So, I mean, I was entertained. I was certainly entertained. I thought it was fun football. I understand the people. Would I have liked to see a little bit more defense? Yeah, it did. There did get to be the point where it's like, okay, the whole, and I covered arena football for a number of years, that whole idea of who gets the ball last, more like basketball than football, I don't particularly love that a whole lot. And it was interesting that the game turned on a strip sack, but clearly it was entertaining and it was close. And to me, that's what I mostly want to see out of the playoffs, especially late in the season, is I want to see close playoff games. If the Cardinals aren't going to be playing in it and I'm not going to be working, I want to be at least satisfied that it's competitive. And that's certainly what it was, and it was an interesting game. Commercials were pretty good, and Nick Foles surprised everybody, including myself.
I mean, to win a Super Bowl, the Eagles, and leave that many receivers wide open. I mean, how many times did Tom Brady not just hit a receiver who was wide open? I mean, the defensive breakdowns on both sides of the ball were staggering for a Super Bowl.
Yeah, there's some, obviously those breakdowns were bad, and I think there's some definite, you have to give credit to the offenses that the offensive lines did a nice job, and there's a lot of talented receivers on the field. Gronk made a couple of catches that were just ridiculous, including that touchdown catch, which was awesome over the shoulder. But I thought it was a crisp, pretty well-played game. I thought it was fun, and we were talking a little bit before, but Doug Peterson, I love the way he coached that game. He went into it, even though it's a Super Bowl, and if you have a lead in the Super Bowl, you're just trying to get that clock to run, and you're trying to hold on, and he just kept his foot on the gas pedal the whole time, was aggressive, and I think that's the way you have to play to beat the Patriots. He clearly went for it a lot on fourth down. He had that unbelievable trick play to pass to Nick Foles to score a touchdown, and it was a lot of fun to watch him do that and have the confidence to do those plays and the confidence in his players to execute on the biggest stage there is.
If Kyle was a NFL coach, he'd do it like he'd have his coach's team like it was a Madden team. Like, never punt, just go for it all the time.
Right. Hey, they won the Super Bowl like
That's
that.
That's true.
I mean, there was one punt in the game. Is that what it ended up being, right?
So, yeah.
There was a single punt in the game.
And especially when it's a shootout like that. I mean, you can't give up possessions. And they
arena
didn't.
Football.
I mean, to put a 40-burger on a Bill Belichick defense when he had 2 weeks to prepare for your offense, it was beyond impressive to do what they did.
And I'm not going to deny that. It is impressive.
But you want to, Darren, so go ahead.
Well, I'm just going to say that to me, that was far from one of the New England's best defenses. And the fact that they didn't play arguably their best defensive back or best cornerback also plays into it to me. I mean, it's not the same as if you would have beaten the Bill Belichick defensive coordinated Giants of once upon a time. You know what I'm saying?
And you know, if I'm a New England fan, I really would like an explanation as to why Malcolm Butler did not play. Is that on Malcolm Butler, or is that on Bill Belichick taking his do your job rule book to the nth degree and costing your franchise a Lombardi trophy?
I think it'll come out eventually exactly what was going on behind the scenes. There's a lot of misinformation and theories and everything, but certainly, you know, if he did something and was punished for it, okay, then that makes sense. But if it was a strategic decision, it's definitely questionable when he's been one of the better cornerbacks in the league for a long time and your defense just gave up 41 points. So Bill Belichick doesn't get questioned often, but if that's the reason, is he just thought they were in a better spot defensively without him, it's definitely a legit criticism.
All right, I have a question for you guys. It's a true-false question. It's a read-and-react question, if you will. And it has to do with
RPO.
The Super Bowl MVP. In a way, you're right, the guy who was running the RPOs. And in a way, this is sort of the same thing, just podcast style. Nick Foles, Super Bowl MVP. At this point, after that happened, the Eagles need to trade Nick Foles because having a Super Bowl MVP on the bench in Philadelphia is just begging for a quarterback controversy. You need to sell high among everything else and the dynamic going on the sidelines there with your future franchise quarterback, Carson Wentz. Darren, true or false?
I'm going to say absolutely false. I'm not going to sit here and say...
You threw an absolutely?
Absolutely.
You're not considering any of those.
I feel that's your whole talk radio thing coming out there, Paul. I mean, I will say this. There's
Darren.
No question you could sell him high, but this whole idea that Nick Foles on the bench... It would be one thing if Carson Wentz hadn't done anything this year, but I absolutely don't. I'm sorry. I just don't believe that the fan base would turn on Carson Wentz.
So you don't
Wentz
think Vinny from South Philly isn't going to be, you know, Carson Wentz throws two picks and they lose to the Bengals. He isn't screaming for the Super Bowl MVP on the bench and you got an issue all week on talk radio?
First of all, let's always remember, Mr. Talk Radio, there's always Vinny from South Philly. It doesn't matter. There's going to be Vinny from South Philly this week. They'll find a reason. They will find a reason. And it really doesn't even matter if it's Philadelphia or Phoenix.
Right.
But Philadelphia, you're right. There's always going to be that guy. But that's, again, that's like paying attention and thinking that the three guys you hear from on Twitter is everybody. And is it really everybody? And I don't buy that it's everybody. You know, to me, the question about what the Eagles are going to do with Nick Foles has everything to do with when you expect Carson Wentz back and do you want to risk – you know, not having a strong backup quarterback. And I've heard arguments from Eagles reporters saying, if you have Sudfeld starting your first couple games next year, if you trade Nick Foles, that's fine. You can tread water. I find that to be a very dangerous way to think. Now, if you can get a first round pick for Nick Foles, you know, you probably absolutely have to think about it. But I also know that.
Oh, I do that in a minute. There's no way they get a first-round pick.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I'm not trading a first-round pick for Nick Foles. I don't think Kyle's trading a first-round pick for Nick Foles, and I don't think any of the NFL teams are trading a first-round pick.
Joe Banner, their former decision-maker, was on Twitter saying they'd be lucky to get a fourth. That personnel man would not give that up for 29-year-old Nick Foles, who's got a year left on his deal.
I mean, people are going crazy because he was just a Super Bowl MVP, but when you're an evaluator, you're looking at the entire body of work. You're not as worried about the recent games as maybe fans are, and he showed he could do it on a big stage, which is important, but when you're talking about predicting for the future, you're looking at every single game he played, and even with the Eagles earlier in the season, he had some bad games, so I think he was in a really good situation. I think a lot of quarterbacks could have succeeded where he did, much like Case Keenum in Minnesota, where if you're a decent quarterback, I think if you were put in that situation with good offensive linemen, good running game, good receivers, if you're just competent, you're going to look pretty good in that situation. So I personally feel like a Sudfeld would be fine for a couple games if you need him. So if the market's there for him, I wouldn't be surprised at all if they traded him.
I will say, again, speaking of Vinny from South Jersey, I think more than anything, I think it'll be the fans that are going to be expecting, maybe over expecting what they can get for Nick Foles. It reminds me of the old school, well, wait, why can't the Suns just trade Kurt Rambis and Nagel Knight and Tim Perry for in his prime Akeem Olajuwon? I don't understand it. I think there's going to be a lot of Eagles fans who are in the euphoria are expecting this giant haul for Nick Foles, and it's going to be tough.
That's back in the days when you were calling Sports Talk Radio. That's a trade right there. And you know what? Look, would I trade a fourth-round pick for Nick Foles? Absolutely. I'd trade a third-round pick for Nick Foles. Second round, that gives me pause. And then first round, absolutely not. You know, the second-round pick makes me think too much of Kevin Cobb in that situation. and honestly, I think—
Andy Reid is nowhere near this.
To a large degree, here's what I really want to know. How much of all that offensive success is strictly Doug Peterson? And, I mean, the coaching job he did and Frank Wright and them scheming it up, I'm really curious to see if Nick Foles goes somewhere else. What does he look like? And Carson Wentz as well. I mean, you know, this type of season he put together in year number two, I think that's a huge credit to that coaching staff. As good as he is and as many skills as he has and the style he plays, he's apt to get hurt again. So that's got to give Philadelphia and Howie Roseman some pause. But as I heard someone say, Howie Roseman just won a Lombardi trophy for the first time ever in Philly. He can do whatever he stinking wants.
That's right.
And the Philly fan is going to have to deal with it.
He built a great team. The fact that your MVP candidate quarterback went down and you still won the Super Bowl with your backup is incredible. And I mean, they're in a good spot where if you keep Nick Foles, then you have a really good backup, probably one of the best in the league. And if you want to trade him, you save that cap space, which means you can keep some other guys and you probably get a draft pick. I agree where maybe you're talking about a fourth-round pick as the ceiling on getting someone for him, but it's still another pick, and then you save the money. So they're in a good spot.
All right, here's the next true or false question. Read and react here, Darren. You ready for this one?
Oh, I'm so ready.
If the Cardinals were to trade assets, meaning players and or picks, for a quarterback, they're much more apt to invest those assets in a trade to move up in the draft than to acquire a veteran quarterback. True or false?
I guess I would say true on that just because the draft is going to be there. The draft is the draft, whereas there's only probably a limited amount of quarterbacks that you're going to look at in the trade market at this point.
And so, I guess where I'm going with that is they're much more apt at this point in their evolution after Kurt Warner and now Carson Palmer to invest in a quarterback who's both the short-term and the long-term answer.
Well,
that's just the vibe
you
I get.
You hope can be. I mean, yeah. The thing is, when you start talking about the long term, you're talking about youth, and you're probably talking about a draft pick. And when you start talking about that, the difference is the known versus the unknown. If you
proven versus unproven.
Well, relatively speaking,
veteran versus rookie.
I mean, I guess that's kind of what they did with Kevin Cobb, and obviously that didn't work out. But I mean, ultimately, yeah. I mean, you would hope that if you were able to trade up in the draft or do anything in the draft to get a young rookie quarterback, that he's the guy. But you're not going to know that, and you would have a better idea if you got a veteran. But I mean, this is the place that you've been put into now, given your quarterback situation.
And especially when you're sitting where they are in the draft in the middle of the first round, I think it makes a lot more sense where they would trade up in the draft rather than getting a free agency, like Darren said, because what veterans are really available that are worth the capital to trade for? I think Alex Smith was the guy that made the most sense, where if you wanted to offer something, then he would have gone to you, and obviously Washington did that. But if the Cardinals are sitting at 15 and you feel like you have to get a few more spots up to get a certain quarterback, because it seems like there's four that are pegged for somewhere in the first round at this point, I think it makes a lot more sense to me that the draft is the option.
All right, so three big questions in the offseason for the Cardinals. The quarterback question, the Larry Fitzgerald question, we think we're closing in on an answer there. The head coach question now has an answer. In fact, here's Fitz on Steve Wilks.
I had a chance to talk to him on the phone, and I've also had a chance to meet him briefly. And everything I've heard about him, from Peanut Tillman to Josh Norman to Luke Kuechly, Thomas Davis, and all the rest of the guys, they've been overly, you know, helpful in terms of what they said about him. I mean, he's been unbelievable in terms of his character, and I'm looking forward to getting to know him a little bit better, him and Mike McCoy. You know, I'm excited about what the future holds in Arizona.
That is Larry Fitzgerald from the Super Bowl, his hometown.
I got to be honest. Yep. When I saw the video originally, I did not realize the music was playing in the stadium quite so loud. Mm. I mean, it is
amazing. We hear it only
it's
on
the clear
podcast.
Audio.
Yes.
All this awesome equipment that Jim Omohundro has. Yep. It's so perfectly.
And right back at you, Larry. Here's Steve Wilks from his intro press conference talking about Fitz.
I spoke with Larry. We had a very in-depth conversation. I enjoyed the conversation that he and I had. He did not express that he was or wasn't coming back. We would definitely love to have him back. He is a major part of our success, past, present, and future. First ballot Hall of Famer. So we would definitely want him back.
All right. Before you guys answer the question, where you think Larry's going with his decision, one more follow-up for Larry about his football future.
I'm contemplating. Yes, absolutely. I mean, I'm excited about what the future holds. Obviously, there's things that need to still, happen. Personnel, draft and things like that to help our team can improve. But I'm confident that the Steve Kahn and his group are going to do a good job with that.
All right, he used the word contemplating, and he cited a couple areas that he's deliberating over. Are we still on board? He's coming back and playing, gentlemen. That's where I'm going with this. Somebody reassure me.
I mean, if I had a guess right now, I would say yes until he says yes, yes. I mean, I think at this point, the one good thing is because we're closing in on this and because it seems like there's a timeline now, then the one thing that I wasn't sure about was how long he was going to wait. Because I did think there could be a possibility that he waited a month or two to actually see how some of this plays out, but it doesn't sound like that's going to be the case.
I honestly thought he would answer the question before the Super Bowl media melee, just so he wouldn't have to deal with it in every single interview. And no, he weathered that storm. He weathered the negative wind chill and the storm of questions about his future in every interview.
And then he just answer why you decide. I mean, either way, you're going to have to do the interviews, so I think he's legitimately still making sure he's probably leaning a certain way on it. And with the way he's talking about the team and the personnel and the coaches, I think that's good from a fan perspective where you hear him and he sounds like he's bought in and trying to figure out how the team's going to look next year, which means he hasn't checked out or anything. I mean, he's looking to see what the team looks like and what they're going to do at quarterback. So I think that trends in the right direction for him coming back.
All right, well, within 24 hours of the Super Bowl, Larry was asked for his timeline on a decision.
It's all hypothetical. I haven't made any definitive decisions. I'll be ready in about a week or two.
All right, that's about as definitive as we're getting about anything, is that his timeline is within a couple of weeks.
And it was interesting, the hypothetical reference was when he was asked about, whether he needed to, what quarterback was going to be there, or if there was a quarterback, I think they might have brought up the Kirk Cousins possibility to him, but if that made sense, that's what he was talking about with a hypothetical, because obviously he's not going to know, especially if he makes a decision in a week or two, which is,
unless
sooner rather than later.
Unless the news somehow breaks by insiders like you guys, like we just got with the Alex Smith, is that maybe what he's anticipating, that within the next week or so, the Arizona Cardinals trade for Nick Foles and word gets out and it gets leaked on purpose so Larry hears it.
So Larry was saying in the week or two that he thought they might trade for Nick Foles before the Super Bowl happened. What if Nick Foles would have been terrible?
Shooting holes in
I'm
your
just
theory.
Saying.
I'm just throwing that out there.
I know you are.
It doesn't necessarily have to be Nick Foles. I don't know who it is.
I think it's fair that it seems like he's trying to figure out what the Cardinals are going to do. And like Darren's saying, in the next week or two, nothing's going to be resolved, most likely, unless they do a trade or something. But we're probably going to be in the same spot we are now, not knowing what's going on at quarterback. But maybe he's trying to be privy to the internal conversations and what's your guys' plan and how do I fit in here? I think he's trying to figure out exactly how it's going to go, but I think it's a good thing that he's deciding earlier because that means he's kind of made up in his mind what he wants to do.
I did have a dad at a league baseball game walked up to me. It was Steve from Phoenix, we'll call him, and he did he did say that.
Talk radio. It always comes back to talk radio.
He walked right at me and said the Cardinals are going to trade for Andy Dalton. Book it. And he walked away. So there's that. Alrighty then, Steve Wilks. How about
Steve
another
from
Steve?
Phoenix is never wrong. So.
how about Steve from Tempe, the new head coach, on his potential QB?
We're going to get a guy that fits the Arizona Cardinals. We're going to make sure we bring the right one in, and He's going to fit our offense, whatever we come up with. But most importantly, he's going to have that character that we want.
All right, so Steve from Tempe isn't mentioning Andy Dalton from the Bengals in a trade. That's just your head coach talking to me.
That's probably good, because if yeah, Steve from Tempe was mentioning anybody on any right, other team, yeah, that would not be good.
That would be a problem. That'd be some serious tampering issues right there, no doubt about it. Is it truly wide open? I mean, do you think in the Cardinals' war room, which is locked and we're denied access, do you think they've narrowed it down to like a couple of quarterbacks, or else we're just going straight into the draft? How
you're
wide
talking
open?
About non-drafting quarterbacks?
Yeah, non-drafting quarterbacks. You know, before we get to between now and the draft,
well,
how wide open do you think it is right now? Or have they already decided on a guy that they're going to pursue at the stroke of midnight on March 14th?
My guess is, if you're talking about wish list when they're trying to figure out their plan for the offseason, I have no doubt that they've compiled something for quarterbacks like they do for a regular free agent, which is, you know, here's X number of guys that we think might be available in trade or are expected to be free agents, and this is how we rank them. And
sort of a depth chart, if you will.
Yeah, I would think, because you have to have something like that. When you say, have they figured out a guy, you can't pick one guy,
right?
Because what if you don't get him? Then you still need a quarterback and you don't have that guy. So my guess is there's a pecking order, and whatever it might be, that's the direction they'll go. I'm not sure what it would be necessarily, and I would be hesitant to guess, but I mean, they clearly have probably done homework by now.
And I think a lot of it depends on value too, where you can have a best laid plan, but like Darren's saying, if your number one QB decides to go a different way because they got more money or they like the situation better, but then there's somebody else on your board where you projected this guy to get this amount of money, it's like the old time signings. Antonio Cromartie a couple years ago was probably not in the discussion in the beginning, and then they realized, hey, we can get this guy for $3 or $4 million less than the market value might dictate. Maybe that happens with a quarterback. There's some quarterback musical chairs, and there's a guy that suddenly looks more attractive because the price tag isn't as high.
Yeah, and I would say that's the biggest problem when you talk about these plans and everything, is there's moving parts that they don't have any control over, which is the rest of the NFL. So, I mean, even if you target a guy, you know, well, take the Alex Smith trade, for instance, the reported Alex Smith trade, he's going to Washington. You know, if the Cardinals had interest, and you know, there's another team there, and yep. Kansas City decides to trade him to another team, and there's not, you can't control that. So,
I mean, you can want Kirk Cousins, but what does he want? What is he going to get if he gets a bidding war between the Broncos and the Jets and the Cardinals and maybe the Bills? You don't know, and then you move on to your next option, presuming you have options. And Steve Keim was asked that question.
We're going to be aggressive in the process, and there's going to be a number of different options, whether it's free agency, whether it's a trade option, or it's the draft, or all three. So we'll as I always say, we'll leave no stone unturned.
And I still think there's a chance that we could get a similar scenario to when the Cardinals acquired Carson Palmer. Now, they're going to get a guy who has a Pro Bowl season for what amounts to a six-round pick. No, but I think...
No, you never know.
I think there are some quarterbacks out there that we just haven't considered that might be available, a la an Andy Dalton, a guy who you might be able to trade for that you're just not anticipating. Because let's hit rewind, Darren. We were all pretty surprised the Cardinals came away with Carson Palmer back in the day.
And quite frankly, when Carson Palmer's name first came up as rumored to possibly go to the Cardinals, I remember thinking, I don't know if this is going to happen. Here's an older guy, and you want to get younger, and you know what's wrong with Drew Stanton as a bridge when you draft a guy, which obviously they end up getting Carson and not drafting guys. So,
and then Steve Keim meets the media and says, I looked at every throw Carson Palmer has made for the last 3 years, and I don't see any deficiencies. I don't see any reason not to sign. And then you realize, okay, there's what the GM has seen in breaking down the game film, and there's the rest of what us media guys think we see and think we know.
That and the internal dynamics of what's going on within the organizations everywhere, where these GMs have a better idea of who's available and who's not. If a certain team has a plan and they're willing to trade their quarterback because they're going after somebody else, or they're going to trade up, or there's a lot of dominoes that can fall, and then the QB market changes. So yeah, it's something where that's what he's saying. he's going to be flexible, and it's going to be a fluid process. And if something like that happens where there's suddenly a guy available, I think they're ready for it, because I think they do a really good job of analyzing everybody they can and having an idea of what they would want to give up for a certain guy, whether it be money or trade or in the draft and draft capital. So I think there's a lot of different ways to fill the position. And I think if you're patient and willing to be flexible, you put yourself in a good position.
So if you're scoring at home, those who have been campaigning openly for Kirk Cousins include Blake Shelton on the Super Bowl pregame show, David Johnson on NFL Network, and then Patrick Peterson on multiple media platforms, correct? Patrick Peterson hasn't been shy about trying to go after Kirk Cousins. Of course, he'd be happier if someone would go after him if you're a quarterback.
Of the best segues I've ever heard, Paul.
I mean, and I'm trying to get to the point that what was his comment? He said, what do I have to do, wear a sandwich board with try me on it? His comment?
Just hold a sign above my head saying try me.
He should just play with a sandwich board around him. That screams
try me. He'd
probably
get more targets.
Throw here with a big bullseye on it. You
have trouble turning the hips with that sandwich board.
So what do you guys – Kyle, you tell me, because you see all these numbers from Pro Football Focus and how many times he's targeted and the percentages, and does it really serve the Arizona Cardinals well to change his job description that dramatically than what we've seen over the last 5 years from Pete Twice?
I don't think dramatically would make sense, because there are going to be probably 8, 9, 10 games where the other team has a bona fide number one receiver. And I think that's always going to be the matchup that they want, is to try to take that guy out of the game. And then hopefully, I mean, you look back at the second half of the season once you had Tremont Williams in there, and that secondary was really good, and they really blanketed everybody. So I think the big key is finding that number two cornerback. But if there are situations where the other team doesn't have a bona fide number one, then I could see it. You play some zone, or you let him move around. Maybe he dips into the slot just to try to mess things up on offense, and it might not result in a bunch of interceptions for him. But if you get the offense seeing something that they're not ready for, and it's just a half a second of the quarterback trying to figure out what to do, maybe that's a sack or a bad throw into coverage or something. So I think it makes sense to mix it up when you can. You're never going to do it at the expense of allowing an Odell Beckham to go against your number two or number three corner. That doesn't make sense. But I think there are certain situations where maybe you consider it.
Well, and I, in doing the story that I wrote on azcardinals.com, number one, Patrick told me in a text that while he wouldn't mind more of an input, he said covering the number one guy, that's what he's done the whole time, and he doesn't really want to change from that, which is kind of interesting. And I feel like he's already kind of coming off like, okay, hold on, let's review exactly what really I want here.
I mean, you guys talk to him on a weekly basis. He takes a lot of pride in covering the number one receiver.
The interesting thing was when I was doing the research for the story and looking at Pro Football Focus, not just the targets, but they actually, which I was impressed with and didn't know they had done, they actually team by team listed all the cornerbacks that actually covered traveled with a particular receiver on each game.
Okay.
Most teams don't do that. And then there's been a handful of teams that do it. And Patrick Peterson is really the only one that did it on a consistent basis. There was a couple teams that had a couple different guys do it. Fewer times, obviously.
But there were a number of opponents where it didn't warrant that.
Well,
the Jacksonville or something
Patrick,
like that.
Patrick only did it in 11 out of 16 games.
Interesting.
So it's not like he did it every game. He did it in games when, obviously, the Cardinals felt it was warranted.
Well, to your points earlier, maybe the best news for Patrick Peterson getting thrown his way is if a quarterback has less time to throw, if he's hurried, and he just throws under duress, because guess what? The guy who led the Cardinals in sacks in 2016 is coming back. That is Marcus Golden, and his new defensive coordinator, Al Holcomb, had this to say.
This league has some great quarterbacks in it, and you have to have the element of being able to rush the pass, which those guys do. There's some great pieces on all three levels, but particularly up front with your edge rushers, you know, those guys are pretty special.
And, of course, talking about Chandler Jones, your NFL sack leader, and the more and more you think about what Chandler Jones was able to accomplish, mainly minus Marcus Golden for the entirety of the season, it is that impressive. In fact, here's Chandler Jones on the hiring of Steve Wilks.
He's coming from the Panthers, and the Panthers was a 4-3 defense, and I've been in a 4-3 defense before, so it's not new or it's not foreign to me, so I'm excited. And I don't prefer either or. As long as I can get after the quarterback, that's what I'm more excited about.
All right, there you go. That's from the Pro Bowl on azcardinals.com. Let's just make sure, Chandler, that's not a mandate for you to balloon back up to 275. Mm-hmm. If you're going to put your hand in the dirt at times. Okay, we can't have that again. Just can't have that.
I'll be very curious to see. You know, we could talk about offense all day, and I think that'll be the bulk of the new stuff this offseason. But I will be interested to see how Al Holcomb and Steve Wilks kind of adjust this defense to what they like to do and what ends up happening and what pieces move around.
And based on the press conference, it is going to be an adjustment. Remember the moment where he said probably the biggest challenge for the defensive players will be learning the new terminology. Mm-hmm. There is going to be a new language for the Cardinals defenders.
There's no question they have talent and learning the terminology, and then like they're insane. I think Chandler and Marcus, there's a lot of focus on them, but I think they're okay with if they do go to a 4-3, but I think you look at the middle linebacker or, you know, the inside, and then obviously it would be a weak side linebacker if it's a 4-3, but what are you going to do with Deion Buchanan and Hassan Reddick? And it's interesting to see how those pieces would fit if you do switch it up. So that's definitely something that'll be interesting. We've talked so much about the edge, but the middle and how small those guys are for linebackers in the 4-3 would be a change. So they definitely have some decisions to make. And the nice thing is you have talent and you have a lot of versatile pieces. So I think they should be able to make it work, but it definitely could be an adjustment for some guys.
All right, so the league year begins March 14th. On February 14th, we're going to get the debut of a brand new series. It'll be on Facebook Watch. It's going to be titled Cardinals Flight Plan. They call it a teaser in the business, mm-hmm. and this is essentially a preview of Episode 1.
The Cardinals are going to finish 8-8 and win in Seattle for the fourth time in 5 years under Bruce Arians in what could be his final game as the Cardinals head coach.
That's my last game. I love all of them, every single one. And man, I'm gonna miss the hell out of it.
I'm not trying to copycat anybody. What I'm trying to do is make the best decisions for us to hire the next leader, head coach, that will deliver championships to this team and to this town.
When you look at coming into a new situation, you always talk about trying to establish a culture. We want to establish a culture of winning.
In a perfect world, would you want a certain type of quarterback?
One that's going to win a lot of games.
Getting to know the quarterback from a mental standpoint is huge.
There's only so many human beings on this earth that can play that position at a high level. Arm strength, the size, the anticipation, leadership, toughness, how he prepares every week.
The guy's got to be the toughest guy in the game. There's no question about it.
Every day that we walk into this building, it's about getting better today than we were yesterday.
No need to apologize for going for it. And that's what we're going to do as an organization. We're going to continue to go for it.
We all working towards one common goal, and that's to bring the world championship here to the Arizona Cardinals.
That is Cardinals Flight Plan, Episode 1, February 14th on Facebook Watch. And if you want evidence, an illustration of how the Cardinals broadcast team has won multiple Emmy Awards, including editing, it is very, very well done. And by the way, a couple of those voices. We heard Kyle in there even. Yeah, Kyle made a cameo.
He's
in
very
there.
Famous.
A few of the voices maybe you didn't recognize, Cardinals scouts from down at the Senior Bowl. So there's going to be a lot of coverage, a lot of footage from the Senior Bowl that I'm very curious to see because, you know, there's some exclusive access that the Cardinals team got down there from all the guys making a lot of these assessments that will go straight into the war room.
The whole trailer will be up on azcardinals.com. Sooner rather than later. I don't know if it'll be quite up when we post this, but soon after, and there'll also be an article on the site kind of explaining the whole series and what's to come, at least in the first few episodes.
By the way, all Cardinals podcasts now on Google Play Music, right? So for all you Android users, just go ahead and search AZ Cardinals podcast, and boom, you are hooked up courtesy of our Jim Almahundro.
iTunes should be working again too, huh?
Nice. All right.
And it's such a critical offseason for the Cardinals that this will be really cool. Kind of documentary, little look behind the scenes at what's going on, and they have a lot of decisions to make. Obviously, Steve Wilks was the big one at coach, but now we keep talking about the quarterback, but they have to find somebody to kind of usher in this new era. So it should be a fun look at everything as the offseason keeps moving.
For example, a lot of the mock drafts right now have the Cardinals going offensive tackle at 15.
Well, that's because at this point, a lot of the mock drafts have all the top quarterbacks well gone by 15.
Can the mock drafts wait until free agency is done? Jeez.
That's right. A lot of those mock drafts have the four quarterbacks going in like the first seven picks.
Here's what's funny to me. I saw a couple of mock drafters. Somebody made that point on Twitter, and a couple of the mock drafters got angry. Like, people want to read them. Yeah. All we're trying to do is give people an idea of team needs / value of where these players are going to fall. But the problem I have is, how do they know where the players are going to fall? They don't know where the players are going to fall. The team needs, okay. That's not that. That makes sense. But
Darren, teams don't draft for need. They draft the best player available.
Well,
yeah, well,
it's fine. It's for entertainment purposes.
Yeah. I don't know. You are the one who brought it up and complained about it, Kyle.
I mean, once you get through free agency, at least then things are more settled. And
you're not going to get an argument from me. I'm very good off my
when
lawn.
Somebody
when
somebody signs Kirk Cousins,
stuff.
They're not drafting a quarterback in the first round.
You know what? Kyle's no longer the mattress down the steps guy at the art museum. I think he's the climb the light pole guy, and he's getting close to being the flip the park car guy. I'm just going to leave you with that one.
He didn't tell us what he did after the Cubs won.
That's true.
I flipped the park car.
And that is Cardinals Underground.